Okay, we're beginning on the top of Kuf Nun Daled Omid Aleph. The Mishnah said that if we have a document in which it does not have language that indicates to us as to whether the person was a Shchemira or Bari at the time that he gifted the property, and now we have an argument between the recipients and the gifter. The recipients say that he was a Bari, and now when he is healthy, doesn't matter, he doesn't have a right of retraction on the gift, and they get to keep the gift. On the other hand, the gifter says, I was a Shchemira. Since I was a Shchemira, now that I'm healthy, there's an automatic retraction of the gift that I gave. The machloket in the Mishnah between Rav Meir and the Chachamim is, whose burden of proof is it to give us the evidence to the fact that he was either a Shchemira or a Bari? So Rav Meir says that, since he is Bari now, you have to bring a raya that he was a Shchemira beforehand. In essence, what Rav Meir is saying, and that's what the Gemara is going to indicate early on here, is that Rabbi Meir says that we go butter hashto, we go after the current situation. Whatever is in front of us now, we assume was the case beforehand. You want to change that? You want to indicate otherwise? Bring evidence to that fact. So he is bari, he's healthy in front of us. We assume that he was also always healthy. He wants to claim he was a shchemira, he's got to bring evidence of that fact. On the other hand, the chachamim believe, hamotzi mechavero olav araya. Over here, the recipients are the ones that are trying to be motzi. They're trying to take the property from the gifter, and therefore the burden of proof is on them. So that's the machloket that we have in the Mishnah. The Mishnah indicates that you have to bring proof to your positions. Both Rabbi Meir says, tzarich lavi raya, that he was a shchemira, and the Chachamim say that a motzi mechavero olav araya. So the term raya is used in both positions. The question is, what type of raya, what type of proof are we looking for? And that's the question of the Gemara here, ra'aya b'mai. What proof are we looking for? The Rashbam over here in the beginning says, ben Rabbanan, ben Rabbi Meir, but me boy. It's asking the question both according to the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir's position. Later on, the Rashbam seems to relent on that position, and the Baal HaTosafot think that he is wrong here. And he says that the question is only according to the Chachamim, because according to Rabbi Meir, it's pashut that you have to bring ra'aya b'edim. Clear that you're going to have to bring proof through Edim, because how else are you going to prove that you're a Shchemira? The Shtar itself is never going to bring evidence to the fact that you're a Shchemira, so the only evidence you could have, possibly, that you're a Shchemira is Edim. So that would be, for sure, by Rabbi Meir, Edim. The question is, by the Chachamim, what is the proof that we're looking for? Amotzi mechavero alav araya. So Rav Huna amar, raya be'edim. Rav Huna says, it's Edim. We want Edim to the fact that he was a Bari at the time. We want Edim to the fact that the gift was given while he was a Bari. Rav Chista v'Rabba b'Rav Huna amrei raya b'kiyum ashtar. The raya we want is someone to verify, validate the shtar. We want the Edim who signed on the shtar, or outside Edim to validate the signatories to the shtar. And through the kiyum ashtar, then we would establish that the gift is a real gift, and therefore the lukuchot, the purchasers or the recipients over here will be able to extract the property from the gifter. Now, as the Rashbam says over here, the kuliyama is linen bater hashto karabo Rabbi Natan. At this point, the Gemara is coming to the conclusion that everybody believes we go bater hashto. We go after the current state of the individual. So that means, similar to Rabbi Natan and Rabba, who we saw yesterday's daf, that they both agreed to this principle of bater hashto. And then we want to know, once you have Bater Hashto. So Rabbi Meir says, the burden of proof is on the individual who is a Bari now. Since he is a Bari, he's got to bring evidence to the contrary. And that evidence comes through Edim. On the other hand, the Chachamim say, yes, we go Bater Hashto, but we have what's called an offsetting Chazoka. We have a Chazoka that the property is in the hands of the Notain. And in order to remove the property from the hands of Notain, you're going to have to bring evidence of that fact. Now, evidence is not evidence in the sense of you have to prove that he was a Bari. All you need to do is bring evidence to the fact that this shtar was a valid shtar. Once you bring evidence to the fact that this is a valid shtar, then automatically the property will move from the gifter to the recipients. So since everybody leaves Batar Hashto, we are establishing the fact that he is a Bari, and he was a Bari. The only question is the shtar that we have here a valid shtar? Rabbi Meir says, you gotta bring Edim to undermine the shtar. The Chachamim say, you need to bring Edim to verify or validate the shtar. Rav Huna amar, raya be'edim. Rabbuna says that the raya that the chachamim are speaking about here is edim. Kamiflagei beplukta the Rabbi Yaakov the Rabbi Natan. They're arguing in the same machloket as Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Natan, who we already saw in yesterday's daf. Rabbi Meir ki Rabbi Natan. Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Natan, which is butter hashta azlinan. Rabbanan ki Rabbi Yaakov. On the other hand, Rabbanan believe like Rabbi Yaakov that we don't go butter hashta, but rather we go butter chazaka. And therefore, the machloket here between them is whether we go butter hashta or we go butter chazaka. That's according to Rav Huna, who says that the raya, the proof that we're looking for here, is edim. In the case of Rabbi Meir, he's looking for edim to undermine the fact that we're going butter hashta. Rabbi Meir, like Rabbi Natan, like Rabbah, believes that butter hashta is linan, and since currently he's a bari, if you want to change that status quo, you've got to bring edim to the contrary. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe we go butar chazaka. We don't go butar the hashto, what the current state is. We go after where the property is found. Currently, the property is found in the hands of the gifter. You want to remove it from his hands, you've got to bring evidence to do that. And that will require edim in order to do so, because the only thing that governs here is the chazaka. You want to undermine a chazaka, you need edim. So that will be the machloka between them, according to Rav Huna, who says that the proof the Chachamim are looking for is proof be'edim. On the other hand, Rav Chista v'Rabba Barav Huna, Amre Raya b'kiyum shtar kamif legei, they believe that they are arguing about whether you need to be mekayem a shtar, whether you need to validate a shtar. B'mode b'shtar shekatavo tzarich lekaimo. The machloka is about when the loveh, for instance, in a case where a debtor admits to the fact that he wrote the shtar. If he admits to the fact that he wrote the shtar, does he then have a right to undermine that statement? In our case, that's exactly what's happening. The gifter is saying, I did give the gift. I did write the shtar. But then he's saying after that, I was a shchid meira when I gave the shtar. So he's both validating the fact that it's a real shtar, but on the other hand, in his validation, he's also qualifying the statement and saying that he was a shchid meira. What right, or does he have such a right to do so? Well, that would depend on what you think the power of the shtar is. If the shtar is powerful enough as it is, and we need no validation, then his coming to undermine the shtar is meaningless. The shtar is valid. He wants to undermine it. He's got to bring a lot more evidence to the fact that he wants to undermine this shtar. On the other hand, if you believe that a shtar needs to be validated, there are two possible ways to validate a shtar. One way to validate a shtar is to say the debtor, or here the gifter, admits to the fact that they wrote the shtar. That's one way to get the shtar validated. The other way to get the shtar validated is to get the edim, who signed on the shtar, or other edim to testify to their signatures on the shtar. Both of those are mechanisms for validating the shtar. Now, if you require a validation, and the validation is coming through the fact that the gifter says to us now, I did write the shtar, then we have a principle of a pesha asur hu a pesha yitir, which is that the same person who's giving us the validation is also qualifying his statement, saying it's a valid shtar, but I was a shchid meira. And since the validation of the shtar, or the only reason we have any validation, is because of his admission, then his admission is qualified, and we're going to have to believe his admission only with his qualification. If we got outside edim to come and verify the shtar, then we wouldn't need his testimony at all. If that's the case, then when he comes and says I was a shchid meira, we're not going to believe him anymore, because there's nothing that gives him that belief over the validated shtar. Then it's equivalent of a migo b'makom edim. We're saying that he has believability because he's the one who told us that the shtar is valid and qualified it. That's only true if he's the one who told us. But if we can validate the shtar independent of him, then his qualification that it's a shchid meira doesn't have any impact over here. So that's what Rav Chista and Rabbi Bar Huna say, that the raya that we're looking for here is kiyum shtar. The Rav Meir savar mode b'shtar shekatavo ein tzarich l'kaimo. Rav Meir believes that if you have a shtar that is written, signed, we don't have to validate the shtar in order for it to be efficacious over here. Therefore, we don't need the testimony of the gifter to verify that there was a gift given. But then he comes along and says, no, I was a shchid meira. His right to qualify it doesn't exist because he's not the one validating the shtar for us. The shtar is validated independently, meaning that you don't need a validation because he admitted to the fact that he wrote the shtar. So if he agrees that there was a gift given over here, the shtar was valid, his admission doesn't require an additional validation above that. On the other hand, Rabbanan Savrei Modeh B'Shtar Shekatavo Tzarich L'Kayemo. Even if an individual admits that he wrote the shtar, you then have to independently validate the shtar. If you need to independently validate the shtar, then his admission is qualified by his statement that I was a Shchem Meira. And therefore, all you have here is an admission of a shtar that was written by a Shchem Meira. You have no more information than that. The machloket between them will be about the necessity to validate the shtar when the gifter is the one who admits to the shtar. Or in a case of a debtor and a creditor, the debtor admits to the fact that he borrowed the money, or he wrote the shtar that says he owes the money. And if the shtar then is automatically validated, then he can't qualify his statement. If the shtar requires another validation, then the only reason we know the shtar is good is because of his admission. Then if he qualifies his own statement, then we're going to listen to him or believe him in that qualification. Don't we already have such a machloka between the Remeir and the Chachamim? The Tanya. We have a breita. Ein ne'amanim l'poslo divrei Rabbi Meir. They're not believed to undermine it. According to Rabbi Meir, Chachamim Omrim, we say ne'amanim. They are believed to undermine it. Over here, the Rashbam explains the case as a case similar to us, a case where a debtor admits to the fact that such an indebtedness took place. Farish ha'atam v'maskana, this Gemara in Ketubot, in the end says, time of the Kasavir Meir, modeh b'shtar shekatavo love, that we have a shtar that's written by the debtor himself, she'ein tzarich malveh l'kaimo. The creditor doesn't need to verify it or validate it. So similar to here, where we have an admission of the gifter that this was a shtar written with a gift, it just qualifies it and says then, I was a Shchem Meira. So according to Rabbi Meir over here, that means that it's a valid shtar, and you can collect with that shtar. The burden of proof is going to be on the gifter to show that he was a Shchem Meira, because once he admits that he wrote the shtar, it's a valid shtar. Similarly, by the debtor, when the debtor either admits, or the shtar is written in the debtor's handwriting. So you know for sure that the debtor admits to the fact that he borrowed this money. If he admits to the fact that he borrowed this money, and this shtar is a valid shtar because he wrote it, or he admits to it, then you don't need any additional validation. In our case over here, number one, you do not have to then get edim to prove that he was bari. We automatically assume he's a bari, and the burden of proof is on the individual to show he was a Shchem Meira. In the case of the debtor, the shtar is valid, and the creditor can collect from him, and the edim don't have a right to undermine the shtar. Because in that situation, the Gemara says that the edim come along and say, yes, we signed the shtar. The only thing was that when we signed the shtar, we were minors. We weren't of the proper age. We signed the shtar, but we were forced. We under duress. Somebody forced us to sign the shtar. It is our signature. It looks like a valid shtar, but we were forced to sign on it. Either one of those issues, which would invalidate the shtar because the edim are invalid. Do the edim have such a right to come along and undermine the shtar? Well, that depends on what you think of the shtar itself. Rabbi Meir says, number one, we have the lovet admitting or the handwriting showing us that the shtar is a valid shtar. Well, since the lovet, the borrower, is admitting either through his articulation or for the fact that he wrote the shtar that it is a valid shtar, then the edim have no right to come along then and undermine the shtar. Edim who come along after the fact and say that we were ktanim, or say that we were anusim, what right do they have to invalidate a shtar? The shtar, with their signatures on it, is considered to be a valid shtar. It's as if it's been nechroka edutan bebeitin. It's as if it's been accepted, validated in beitin. Edim can't come along now and all of a sudden cast dispersions on their signatures on the shtar. Therefore, Rabbi Meir says, einam ne'amanim. Those edim are not believed and the shtar is a valid shtar. The Chachamim, on the other hand, believe, similar to our case of Eir, that when you have a shtar, even when the gifter admits, over there, the lovet, his handwriting or his admission is that he borrowed the money, that shtar is still not a valid shtar. It still needs validation of above and beyond that. How does that validation come about? Through the Edim. The Edim come along and say, we did sign on this shtar. That is exactly what you're looking for, validation. But they qualify their statement and say, when we signed on it, we were minors. When we signed on it, we were under duress. By doing such, they undermine their own statement or their own position, which is peshe asura, peshe hitir. The person who's telling us that it's a valid shtar is also telling us it's an invalid shtar. They're admitting to their signatures, but they're qualifying that and saying our signatures were improper at the time. And if they're the only ones who can give us the validation of the shtar, then they are ne'manim. They are believed to invalidate the shtar or to free the debtor from having to pay in that case. That's what the Gemara is saying here, is that we have the same machloket over there between the Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as we have over here. Over here you're saying that the machloket, according to one who says that the raya, for the Chachamim is a Rayat Ashtar, that you have to validate the Shtar. Then the Machloket in our Mishnah is, do you require validation of the Shtar after the gifter admits to the fact that he gifted the property? But the Meir says no. If that's the case, then the Shtar is valid. Shtar is valid, the recipients of your keep it, unless he can prove it was a Shchemera. The Chachamim say no, you need a validation of the Shtar. How do you get a validation of the Shtar? The only validation we have here of the Shtar is the admission of the person who wrote the Shtar, the gifter. And his admission is qualified by the fact that he was a Shchemira at the time, so the only way to overcome that is to bring in independent Edim and validate the Shtar. And that's what the Chachamim say. Hamotzi mechavero ala baraya. Validate the Shtar and you can keep it. Same thing over there in that case. The Loveh admits to either writing the Shtar, his handwriting is there, so it's a tacit admission to the fact that he borrowed this money. So now we want to know, do you need to validate the Shtar, or is the Shtar automatically validated because he admits to it? Rabbi Meir says it's automatically validated. The Edim come along now and they want to cast aspersions on their signatures. We don't care. The Shtar is validated. It's a valid Shtar you can collect with. We don't care what the Edim say. The other hand, the Chachamim, similar to over here, say, even with the admission of the Loveh, you still need to validate the Shtar. That means you need some information in order to validate it. The only information we have is the Edim, who come along and say, we were signatories to the Shtar. Well, if they're signatories to the Shtar and they tell us that those signatures were invalid, then you don't really have a validation of the Shtar. They're in the same breath that they're telling you that it's a valid Shtar, they're telling you it's invalid, and therefore you don't have a validation of the Shtar. If it could somehow, independently, other Edim come along and say these are their signatures, then the Shtar would be valid, because then we have independent evidence to the fact that the Shtar is valid, and then the Edim coming along and casting aspersion on it will not matter anymore. It's only because through them we know that it's a valid Shtar, they can also invalidate the Shtar by saying we were Ketanim, or that we were under duress when we signed on the Shtar. So what the Gemara is saying is, why do you have Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim arguing at the same point twice? Why do I need two Mishnayot to tell me the exact same machloket between them? And the Gemara is going to go on to say it's Tzricha. Just to note that the Rishbam brings the conclusion of the Gemara over there based on his opinion as well as Rashi. Rashi and the Gemara Ketubot explains it the same way, which is that the case is that the Loveh admitted to the fact that the Shtar was valid. There are others who say that it's just plain and simple. We have a Shtar that we want validated. If we have a Shtar that we want validated, who's going to validate the Shtar? The Edim. The Edim show up and they say that the Shtar is valid. But then they qualify their statement afterwards and say, we were under duress. We were minors at the time. So then, in the same breath that they're validating the Shtar, they're also invalidating the Shtar. So the Chachamim believe that that's a Migo. Migo or a Pesha Asu, Pesha Hitir. They're the ones who are validating the Shtar. They have a right also to invalidate the Shtar through their testimony. We were Edim, but improper or problematic Edim. Rabbi Meir says, once you admit to the fact that the Shtar was written and you signed on it, we're going to assume it was a valid Shtar. You want to afterwards now come and qualify your statement, say you're a minor, say that you were under duress. You don't have a right to do that. And again, that would be similar to our case over here. We have an admission by the gifter. What does that do? Is the admission of the gifter enough, and then his qualification is meaningless? Or is the admission of the gifter subject to his qualification? Rabbi Meir says he admitted to writing it. We don't really care that he's qualifying it after that and saying, oh, it was a shchemira. We ignore that. So too over there, Rabbi Meir says, the Edim are saying we signed it. Oh, they're saying afterwards we were minors, we were under duress. We ignore that part. They said they signed it. They said they signed it. It's a valid Shtar. On the other side, the Chachamim believe that over here when he admits to gifting it, he's the one who's validating the Shtar. He's validating the Shtar. He could also qualify his statement and say it was a Shchemira. Over there, the Edim are the ones who are validating the Shtar and saying those are our signatures, but has a qualification that hurts validation of the Shtar, and therefore it's not a valid Shtar. So that's how the other Rishonim learn, without the admission of the Loveh, they simply say that it's the Edim. How do you look at the Edim's testimony about their signatures on the Shtar? So now you have, again, two Mishnayot that seem to have the position of the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir repeated in this Machloket. Mar said, Tzricha, we need both of them. Di Mar Hahi, if we only had that one, Bayi Kamrei Rabbanim Mishum Dalime Edim. That's because over there, the Edim are more powerful. Umare Shtara, and therefore they have a right to undermine the validity of the Shtar, to cast aspersions on the Shtar. Over here, what right does he have to undermine the Shtar? So aim below, and then I would have said that that's not the case. So if we only had the Breita and Ketubot, where the Chachamim say that the Edim are believed to disqualify themselves, then in that case, we would say that's because they are Edim. Edim have special powers. That's what the Torah grants. Two Edim can come and testify. They can testify in any case, and they're believed just because they're two Edim. So maybe over there, that's where the Chachamim say that the Edim have the power to undermine the validity of the shtar. They come along and say, we signed it, but we signed it when we were minors. We signed it, and we were under duress. As Edim, they have that power to undermine a shtar. Like any two Edim will show up and say that this is a false shtar, this is a forgery. Edim have a right to do such. They have a right to invalidate a shtar. So too over there, the Edim have that right when they qualify their statement. But over here, who's the one invalidating the shtar? It's the gifter who's invalidating. He's saying, I did write the shtar, but I was a shchem meirah. He's coming as a single individual and trying to undermine the shtar. Maybe over there, we would not say that his admission is qualified by his statement as a shchem meirah. Maybe his admission makes it into a valid shtar, and now you're going to need two edim to undermine it. And he's not two edim. He's just a single individual. So based on that, we would have thought, had we only that breita from Ketubot, that the Chamim's position is premised on edim undermining the shtar. But here, if an individual undermines the shtar, maybe that would not be the case. And vice versa, v'itmar b'ha, had we only had our Mishnah over here, b'halka Rabbi Meir, that's where Rabbi Meir says that the gifter does not have a right to undermine the shtar of Abahach. But in the case in Ketubot, we're talking about edim, emimoduhu l'rabbonon, maybe they would agree to the Rabbonin's position that Edim have the ability to undermine the shtar because they are Edim. Tzricha, that's why we need both machlokot. That's why we need the machlokot over there in Ketubot. So that's the machlokot over here because they teach us different dinim in the spectrum of their positions. That their positions are both true by the case of the individual who's admitting and saying that, yes, whatever is said here is true, but... And the same by Edim, who say, yes, these are signatures, but... Both of those cases are on the spectrum of where the Chachamim and the Rabbi Meir argue, because you could have thought otherwise, that maybe the din of Edim is different than the din of the individual. Again, depending for the Rabbanan in one direction, and for Rabbi Meir in the other direction, which would have made you think, possibly, that their opinions are differentiated in those cases. The two Mishnayot teach you that their opinions are the same in both of these situations. V'chein amar Rabbo raya be'edim. Rabbo also says that the proof here is a proof of edim according to the Chachamim. Now, this statement of Rabbo is very problematic. That is because we had Rabbo in yesterday's daf. First line on Amud Bet is, amar Rabbo arei meit v'arei kvaro mochiach alav. Rabbo says that the guy has passed away. He's in his grave. Then, of course, we're going to assume that the Matnat Shchimera was a Matnat Shchimera, even though it didn't write in the document that he passed away. It simply said that he was on his deathbed, he was ill, but they didn't have the language in there that said he passed away, which was written after he had passed away, so we don't know if he passed away or not. The Yoshim are claiming he got better and then passed away. So therefore, we're entitled to the Yerusha. The people who are the recipients of the gift say he passed away from that illness. It was a Matnat Shchimera, and we're entitled to it. Rabba said over there, Bater Hashta Azlinan. We go after the current state. In the current state, he's in the grave. He's dead. You want to prove to me that he got better and then died? You got to bring evidence to that. Otherwise, we assume he was on his deathbed and he's dead. We assume that was a continuum. He got sick, he gave him Matnat Shchemira and he died. So the Rabbo says that we go Bater Hashta Azlinan. For Rabbo, it would be much better to explain our Mishnah as a case of Kiyum Shtar. Because we just said before, according to the opinions, Rav Chista, Rabbi Rav Huna, who say that the Macholoket in the Mishnah is about Kiyum Shtar, and that's what the Chachamim are saying over here, bring evidence through a Kiyum Shtar, then everybody agrees, but they're Hashta Azlinan. That means that both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim in the Mishnah believe that we go after the current state of affairs. In the current state of affairs, he's healthy. That means you've got to bring evidence to take that property from him. What type of evidence? Rabbi Meir says his admission that he gifted it is enough evidence. The Chachamim say, no, you need the validation of the shtar. But everybody agrees we go after the current state. So for Rabbo, it would be much better to explain the Mishnah as being a machloket about kiyum shtar. Because in that case, everybody holds Bater Hashta Azlinan. If you say, like Rabbo says over here, Raya be'edim, that the Chachamim's position is that you got to bring proof or evidence to edim, then their machloket is about exactly that point. The machloket is, do we go Bater Hashta, or do we not go Bater Hashta? Rabbi Meir, similar to Rabbi Nathan, similar to Rabbo, believes we go after Hashta, we go after the current state. Rabbi Meir says the current state is that he's healthy. He's got to prove he was a Shchemira. Chachamim say, no, we don't go Bata Asha, we go Bata Chazaka. We go after the Chazaka, and the Chazaka is the properties with the gifter. And now you want to take it away from him? But that's difficult for Rabbah. He's now making the Mishnah that Rabbi Meir holds Bata Hashta like Rabbah, but then the Chachamim are against his position. Why would he set up a Mishnah where the majority position is against him? He believes Bata Hashta is Lina, and now he's saying the Chachamim and the Mishnah believe that you can't say Bata Hashta. So why is it that he would set up the Mishnah in that manner? That's the question all the Rishonim ask. So there are different ways to deal with it. One way to deal with it is to say, Rabbah changed his mind. Abaye over there asks questions of Rabbah's position. He challenges Rabbah's position. Maybe Rabbah changed his mind, and now he says, no, you're right, we don't go Bata Hashta, we go Bata Chazaka Azlina. That's one way to read the statement of Rabbah over here, as undermining the previous position that he had, he changed his mind. The second way to read it is, Rabbah believes that Bata Hashta Azlina, he's just explaining the Mishnah, and this is what he believes is the right way to read the Mishnah, even though that's not as good for him, because then you have the Chachamim disagreeing with his position. But he's being honest about the Perush of Mishnah, and he believes the Mishnah should be written in that manner, because Rabbi Meir in the Reish is talking about Raya through Edim, then the definition of the term Raya and the Sefer for the Chachamim should be the same definition, which means Edim. So his explanation is connected to the Mishnah, not to his personal position. And so he'll explain the Mishnah that way, but he still personally will believe that Bater Hashka is Lina, even though Chachamim disagree with that in our Mishnah. The other possibility that the Balei Tosafot bring, they speculate and say, if you could find anywhere in Shas, if they already say that, that means that they're not aware of this, but if you could find anywhere in Shas, where Rabbah says, Mode b'shtar shekatavo, ein tzarich l'kaimo, that if you admit to writing a shtar, you do not need to validate or get it validated anymore. I mean, in our case, if the gifter admits he wrote the shtar, he would not need to validate it, then he could not set up the Mishnah in the other manner. Setting up the Mishnah in the other manner would say that he's holding like Rabbi Meir and not the Chachamim. So the fact that he didn't set it up that way is because he has this alternate opinion. If you could find it somewhere that Rabbah has that opinion, then that would be what forced him in this direction to say that it is speaking about Edim. Right, so now Rabbah agrees with the position of Rav Huna, and says that the Raya is Be'edim. Amar Le Abaye. Once again, Abaye challenges his Rebbe Rabbah and says, "My time. Why would you believe that we're speaking about Edim over here? Since any other shtar that was given by a Bari would have the following language in it, which is, Karav Malech Araglohi Bishuka. When he was walking on his feet in the Shuk. That's in contrast to a shtar Shchimera, which says in it that he's laying on his bed. So walking around the shuk is just evidence of the fact that he is a bari. So he says, since every other shtar that is a matnat bari would have that language in it, ubaha lo ktivba, and you're telling me this shtar doesn't have that in it. Since it doesn't have it in it, it must mean that it is not a shtar bari, but rather a shtar shchimera. Shmamina shchimera havi. So from that view, we conclude that it was a shchimera, and that's why the chachamim require a deem in order to evidence the fact that he wasn't a shchimera. That the people who want the gift got to bring a dim. We assume he was a shchimera. He was a shchimera. He has a right of attraction when he got healthy. You want to bring evidence to the contrary? Show us that he was a bari. Adarabba. You should say just the opposite. Since every star shchimera has the following language in it. Kad katsir virami be'arsei. When he was ill, bedridden, this is when this shtar was written. So there are languages that indicate it is a shtar bari, or languages that indicate that it is a shtar shchemira. This shtar has neither of them in it. So Abaye says to Rabbah, you're telling me that you think it's a shtar shchemira because the language of bari is absent. You could have equally said that it is a shtar bari because the language of shchemira is missing. So what type of proof is that? Rabbah says back to him, you're right. Iga meimar hachi, vika meimar hachi. Rabbah says, you're right. You could say either one of these. Either one of these is a valid conclusion. You could have said that a shtar bari should have had the language in it. Since it's missing, he is a shchimera. Or a shchimera should have this language in it. So that's evidence that he is a bari. Now you have no evidence from the shtar. The shtar basically becomes a safek. So if that's the case, uki mamona b'cheskat marei. Whenever you have a safek, we go after the chazokah. So here you have a safek as to whether it's a matnat bari or a matnat shchemira. The shtar brings no evidence to that fact. So what do I tell you to do? Leave everything as it is. Give everything, put the chazakah in place. What's the chazakah? The gifter has the property. You want to move it from him? Bring raya, bring edim to that fact. Now, in addition, that obviously makes it obvious why also the validation of the shtar here will do nothing. Since the shtar in and of itself is unclear, the only way to bring evidence is through edim. Bring evidence to the shtar will do nothing for you because the shtar itself, as validated, will tell you no more information. It just tells you there was a gift given. It doesn't tell you whether it was a shchimir or a bari. It just tells you that it was a gift given. So therefore, you need a deem to come along and say that he was either a shchimir or a bari at the time. And those edim then will help us to determine what type of gift was given at that time. And that's what Rabbah says, the machok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim are in the Mishnah. Do we go butter hashto according to Rabbi Meir? And therefore, since he's healthy now, we assume he's healthy then. He wants to change that. He's got to bring evidence to the fact he's a shchemira. Chamim so, we go butter chazaka. The gifter is in possession of the property. You want to take it away from him, bring proof to that effect, and you need edim to show that he was a bari at the time that he gifted and not a shchemira. Uplokta de Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. It's the same machloket as Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. The Rabbi Yochanan and my raya beidim. Rabbi Yochanan, similar to Rabbah, similar to Rav Huna, says that the evidence we're looking for here in the Chachamim is Edim. Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Amar Raya, B'kiyum Mishtar. Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Reish Lakish, believes similar to Rav Chista and Rabbah by Rav Huna, that the evidence we're looking for here is Kiyum Mishtar. Now, Etevei, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan now challenges Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Maaseh b'Bnei Brak. There was an incident in B'nei Brak. Now, today you would say, B'nai Brak, everybody knows where B'nai Brak is. Everybody knows that B'nai Brak is a city here in Eretz Yisrael. You look in the Rashbam, he says, B'nai Brak, Makom, Shem Makom, it's the name of a place. So it is in the Haggadah, which would seem to indicate that people were aware of the fact that B'nai Brak was a city. But the Rashbam feels it necessary to tell you that B'nai Brak is a place, it's the name of a location, and not the name of a family, the sons of Brak. As soon as you read this and say, Maaseh B'nai Brak, you, the only thing you would think is a city. The fact that they would have an alternative view of it tells you their association, that B'nai Brak was not as closely associated with the city B'nai Brak as the B'nai Brak, the children of Barak. Bechad shemachar nechtse aviv. An individual who engaged in a transaction with his father's possessions, umet, and then he passed away. Ubo b'nei mishpacha, and the family came, v'ir aru lomar, and they came and claimed, katana yabashat mita. The one who transacted in this property was a katan, he was a minor. So you have here an individual inherited property from his father. We're going to see that familial property. On tomorrow's daf, we will see that there are minimum ages in which you're allowed to transact in familial property. So even though normally a person who involved in a transaction, as long as they are of age, their transaction is valid and we consider it to be a binding transaction. Tomorrow, the Gemara is going to qualify that and say that that's not true when you're dealing with familial property. There's a higher threshold for dealing with familial properties. That means you have to be over the age of 18, 20, 22. There's a threshold of age where we say that the person then is wise enough and astute enough and well-versed in what's going on in the world that they can transact in the property. Before that point in time, we're afraid that they're going to be taken advantage of and they're going to sell the property even though they shouldn't sell the property. So this is a unique threshold by familial property. And again, especially since it is familial property, we want it to stay within the family. And if someone is selling it, already we have to question their motives for selling it. In their day, selling property was not considered to be a wise type of transaction. Property was the ultimate stored value. It was the way that you could produce. It was the way that you could save. So selling the property would consider it to be a abnormal behavior. And therefore, we want someone who is well versed in the economics as well as what's going on around him in the world that he would make that such a sale. So here, in this case, it seems like this person was below that threshold, below the age. He had inherited the property from his father, transacted in it, and then passed away. The Yorshim, his Yorshim, come along and say he was too young to transact in the property. And since he was too young to transact in the property, the transaction is invalid, and we inherit the property. The Kuchot, the buyer, say no, he was of the age, it was clear that he was fine to do it, and he sold it to us, and it's a valid sale. We want the property that he sold to us. That's the machloka that's taking place here. And they're going to Rabbi Akiva to adjudicate it. I just note this, that the Gemara after this is going to speak about simanim. Simanim are generally terms that are used for determining someone's age around the age of 13. When a child goes from being a katan to a gadol, or a girl goes from being a katana to gadola, See, manim are usually the pubic hairs that indicate that an individual is a gadol. So the Gemara is going to speak about that, which seems to make it sound like the situation or the story there was about a child, and the machloket is, was he above 13 or below 13? But even so, the Rashbam and others seem to indicate that the question is about whether you have age to transact, because that's the upcoming Gemara. And the upcoming Gemara is going to speak about the threshold of age being 20, and then was he above the age of 20 or below the age of 20? But in that circumstance, then what does it matter to speak about simanim in that situation? Because you're way beyond the point in time when simanim would be valid. And they explain that this individual was late in maturing, and therefore we weren't sure or we weren't absolutely certain that he had simanim yet. And we'd only be certain if we checked, and we would expect you to check the chazaka is not good enough. Again, I'll speak about that more in a second, but just be aware of that difference or issue, which is that usually simanim are associated with the age of 13, and we're speaking about someone who's on a threshold of the age of 20 in transaction in the father's property. V'shalu et Rabbi Akiva ma'u levodko. So now they went to Rabbi Akiva and they want to check him, post-mortem. They want to check if he was a gadol. So again, if you're talking about simanim and you're talking about the age of 13, it makes sense. At 20, it's the same thing, but they want to validate he was 20 through these simanim to show that he really was a gadol. But then Tosafot does ask from the general chazoka that we have, which is that once a person reaches the age when they should be of age, we assume that they do have the simanim. Why all of a sudden over here would you think that this individual doesn't have simanim, especially given their more advanced age? So he says, V'yesh lamar, she'achrei she'aya zik gadol, she'agia l'chlau shnutav, v'lo ayu simani gadlut, v'hachayika l'sfukei shema katan aya adayin. Because this is an individual who had already reached the age, and seems that there's some evidence of the fact that he doesn't have simanim, therefore we might persist in that questioning of his becoming a gadol, even to a more advanced age of 20. And so though, even though he's crossed over that threshold of age where we would assume that he has simanim, since at that point we didn't see simanim, even at the age of 20, we will still assume that maybe there's a problem with that chazaka, and without evidence, we won't believe that he is a gadol. Amlan, iyatayim reshaim l'navalo. You don't have a right to denigrate, to embarrass the mate, and go do a bdika and check on the mate just for monetary matters. That is a pgam in kvod mate. It's not an autopsy, but to expose the mate and go in there and try to investigate to see if he has the simanim, that is not appropriate for a mate. That's number one. Ve'od, in addition to that, simanim asuyim lishtanot achar mita. Simanim change. Death is a traumatic experience physically for the body, and therefore you might see changes in the body that cause you to see something that is not true. Now over here, this is much harder than you would think. Generally, when we talk about simanim, ayusuim lishtanot, for instance, if we say someone was a gadol, they really were of age, and then after the fact, we want to go and check to see if they were of age, we say that things might have changed after they passed away. So for instance, they had pubic hairs, and then after death, they fell out. And so now you think he's a katan, but that's not good evidence because they fell out. In this case, they want to do just the opposite. They want to go in there and see that he is a gadol. And sure enough, they're going to find that he had pubic hairs and he was a gadol. Then Rabbi Akiva says, well, that check is invalid because it could have changed at death. What does that mean that it could have changed at death? What is he saying that changed after death in order to make it that the situation is now, even though you're seeing him as a gadol, he's really not a gadol? So amongst the Rishonim over here, you have different approaches to it. The Baal Yad Tosafot quote from the Rabbeinu Tam, it's also quoted in the name of Rabbeinu Chananel in other places, so it might be a mistake here in this Baal Yad Tosafot. I mean, he might be quoting the Rabbeinu Chananel, even though he says the Rabbeinu Tam over here. The fact that the hairs might have changed from being white to black. That before he passed away, they were white hairs, and then after he passed away, they turned black. Now, that assumes something that we don't have any evidence of, which is that white hairs would not be a siman. Only black hairs would be a siman. And that's why the Baal Yad Tosafot over here reject that explanation, as well as many of the Rishonim reject this Rabbeinu Chananel, is where did you ever find that there's a difference between white hairs and black hairs? In Tzorat, we have such a distinction. But in Simanim, for a Katan to a Gadol, we never find such a distinction. And therefore, they reject that as the understanding. Others suggest that the hairs were there beforehand, but they were not long enough to qualify to be considered a Siman. And that there's a minimum shiur for the hair to be classified as a hair for a simanim. They didn't reach that minimum threshold before he passed away. After he passed away, either the hairs grew a little bit, or the individual, after they died, their body or their skin became tighter or less supple. And because of that, the hairs became longer or looked longer. So therefore, the evidence that you're bringing after the fact may not be the true state of what the person was in before the fact. Balei Tosafot here bring another possibility, which is it was a case, the Gemara Nidah speaks about the fact that you require not only hairs in order for the individual considered a gadol, you need hair follicles. The hairs have to be coming out of a hair follicle which has a small bump along the skin that has that hair follicle in it. So in order to be qualified as a gadol, you need both the follicle and the hair. So what the Balei Tosafot suggests is that had you looked at him prior to the death, you would only have found the hairs and not the follicles. After he died, either again because of the constriction of the body or because of the trauma to the body, the hair follicles appeared. And therefore, you're looking at something that looks like a gadol now, but that could have been changed by the impact of death. Again, it's harder than the normal case that we speak about death changing the issues here. But here, the Rishonim are trying to figure out, what does it mean to change? And you're looking at a gadol, but he's really not a gadol. So again, in the opposite direction, it's much easier to understand, which is that you're seeing no hairs here, but he might have been a gadol before because they fell out at death. But here you have to create a positive statement, which you have to say something changed to the positive, which is that he now looks like a gadol, but he wasn't a gadol before. So either the opinions that we saw was as white hairs to black hairs, has to do with the length of the hairs, or it has to do with the hair follicles, and those are the ways to deal with it. So that's what Rabbi Akiva says to them, that there for two reasons you're not permitted to check. One is that it's a nivol, and number two is that it might have changed with death. So Bishlama Didi, Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, according to me, all this makes sense. Damino Raya Beidim. I say that the evidence that the Lekuchot have to bring over here are Edim. They have to bring Edim to testify to the fact that it was sold to them when he was a Gadol. Kemenda Marle Lekuchot Aite Edim of Lo Ashkecho. The buyers, Rabbi Akiva says to them, go bring Edim to evidence the fact that you bought it from him when he was a Gadol. And they don't find any Edim. I know the Ka'atuv Amrule. So now they approach Rabbi Akiva and say to him, Ma'ul Avotko. Let's check them. I want to check out the mate. Let's find out if he was a gadol. So their first line of offense was to go get Edim. They can't find Edim. So now their second line of offense is to go and check the body and say, let us check the body. And Rabbi Akiva responds in the negative that you can't do that. Ela didach, according to you, the amar raya b'kiyum mishtar, that the only raya is validating the shtar. What is the purpose of checking the individual, whether he was a gadol or not a gadol? All they have to do is validate the shtar, and in validating the shtar, they'll get the nechasim. And as the Rashbam says, that if you validate the shtar, automatically we'll assume that he is a gadol, because of something that you indicated before, which is that people only sign on a shtar if they know that the person transacting is a valid individual to transact. If they sign on the shtar, then automatically we will assume that he is a gadol. So for me, Rabbi Yochanan says, there could be a situation in which we have no edim. We have no evidence of the fact that he was a gadol. So for me, I need to come up with something else to do. What's the other thing? Check the body. For you, you don't need edim that he was a gadol. As long as you validate the shtar, you'll get everything you want. You'll get the validation of the shtar, but the validation of the shtar will also show that he was a gadol. Because by definition, the edim would only sign if he was a gadol. So for you, you don't need Edim that he was a gadol. Checking the body is not your best way to go. Your best way to go is just to get the shtar validated. And you should be able to find Edim to validate the shtar, either the Edim who signed it, or someone who could testify to their signatures. So why are they trying to check the body if they could validate the shtar? Misavar, to Reish Lakish says back to Rabbi Yochanan, you got the situation incorrect here. Nichsei b'chezkat b'nei mishpacha kaimei, you think that the property is with the family right now. These Lekuchot entered you into a transaction to buy the property. But they didn't get the property yet. They had put the money down, and now they didn't get the property yet. The Bnei Mishpacha's inheritors are holding onto the property right now. So now, who's the Motzi Michaviro Alav Araya? Is they, Lekuchot, need to move the property. So in that case, Rabbi Yochanan says Edim. Rabbi Reish Lakish says Shtar. Validate the Shtar, and that's how you get it. So now, if you think that it's in the possession of a mishpacha, b'kata luchot ume'arare, and then the luchot come and cast aspersions on the mishpacha's claim and say that we really bought it, nechsei b'chezka luchot kaime. It's the other way around. The buyers already got possession of the property. B'kata b'nei mishpacha b'kama arare. And then the family is coming along and questioning the validity of their purchase. So then the evidence is moving in the other direction. In the direction where the lukuchot have to bring evidence, then Rabbi Yochanan says the evidence has got to be a dim, Rish Lakish says the evidence has got to be a shtar, or the validation of the shtar. In the case where the lukuchot already have possession of the property, and the family is saying you didn't deserve it, you got to give it back to us, validating the shtar is not going to do anything in that case. They need to invalidate the shtar. They need to show that he wasn't a gadol. The only way they can do that is through a dim. And so what Rish Lakish says is, I agree that it's a dim over here. Not because it's moving in the direction that we thought, it's because it's moving in the opposite direction. The kuchot already have possession of it. Family wants to get it back. The only way they can do that is to invalidate the shtar or prove that he was not a gadol. Hachanami mistaver, and he says, my position even makes more sense. Midikamalu, because Rabbi Akiva says to him, iatem rishayim lenavlo, that you cannot defile, denigrate the body by going and checking it after death in order to get your property back. Vishtiku, and they were silent. They did not argue on Rabbi Akiva about that point. If you believe that it's the family that is bringing questions about the validity of the sale, Shemachi Ishtiku, that's why they were silent afterwards. If you say that it's the kuchot that are casting aspersions on the family taking possession of the property, and now they want to take the property away from the family, Amai Shatke, why were they silent? We gave him money. We're going to be out a ton of money over here. Who cares about denigrating the body? Let it be denigrated so we get this solution to the problem, so that we get our money back. As the Balei HaTosafot point out over here, there's a difference between lost opportunity versus actual losses. In the case of the Kuchot, they are suffering real losses over here. They put out money, they bought the property, and now they're suffering real losses by not getting the property that they had purchased. On the other hand, for the family, it's missed opportunity. They're inheriting property. They didn't put any money out for it. It's not their property. It was this individual's property. He sold it. He got money for it. The fact that they're not going to inherit that, that's not a loss that they are sustaining. It's simply lost opportunity. And therefore, you have a difference in how they would react. We would assume that the lukuchot would not be worried about being menavel the body, because they're suffering real economic losses. Those economic losses, they're going to say, we're not going to sustain losses in order to give kavod to mate. He's the one who put us in this position. Bimifazeh, the mate, and figure out whether if he was a gadol or not. For the family, who it's just a question about inheritance, will they get a windfall or they won't get a windfall? Over there, if Rabbi Akiva says it's an evil to the mate, they're going to respect that and not do it. So that's what Rashi Lakish says. That's a proof to me that the question here is deriving from the side of the B'nai Mishpacha, not the side of the Kuchot. Because from the B'nai Mishpacha, you can understand why they backed away when Rabbi Akiva says that it's an evil. Where it says, Ibn Shumha, lo iria. That's not a good proof. Hachi kamerle, chado. This is how they reacted to him. Chado diatem rishayim lenablo. Number one, you're not allowed to denigrate them. Va'od, im demro zuze shakal lenavel v'lenavel. If you want to say that so you took money, let us embarrass him. Let us not worry about kavoda mate. Simanim asuyim lishtanot achar mita. Then simanim change after mita. It seems to what you're saying is, oh, they let this nivel go by. That's not true. Over there, Rabbi Akiva gave two answers. He said, first of all, it's nivel a mate. Number two is asuyim lishtanot. That actually sounds like there were two stages to the conversation. The conversation went like this. Bring evidence to the fact that you're entitled to this property. Bring a dim that you're entitled to the property. Kuchot come back and say, we don't have any evidence. Let's check the body. Rabbi Akiva says, it's an evil to check the body. They say, that's fine. He took our money. We want to check him out. Rabbi Akiva says, that doesn't matter, because even if you do check it out, the evidence is not going to be foolproof because of the fact that asuyim lishtanot achar mita. So that will be the sequence of events according to Rabbi Yochanan, and that's why it's not a proof to Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish will read the story in Bnei Brak the following manner, which is, the Bnei Mishpacha are coming to make a claim. The Kuchot already have the property. The Bnei Mishpacha are coming, and that's why they want a dim, because it's the only way they can invalidate the shtar. Kuma shtar is not going to help them, though, here. It's going the opposite direction. Kuma shtar will give it to the Kuchot. So only evidence they can bring is a dim. So then Rabbi Akiva says to them, bring a dim. They say, we can't bring a dim. Let's check the body. Rabbi Akiva says, you can't check the body because it's an evil to check the body. Okay, you accept that because you're mishpacha, but just let me let you know that even if you check the body, you wouldn't get anything from it. But not that is, they answered him afterwards and said, let's be manavim. No, it's all part of one answer. It's two parts to the same answer, which says, number one, it's nivolamate. They backed away because they're family. But let me placate you and say that even if you checked, they wouldn't have done anything anyway. So that's where you read the Gemara. And then, Reish Lakish shakes off the question of Rabbi Yochanan. It's not a proof to him, but Rabbi Yochanan asks him a question over here. It sounds like Edim are the main issue over here. That's why they go to the check in the body afterwards, and not the Kiyum Ashtar. Reish Lakish answers that problem by saying the case is in the opposite direction. That's why I agree you need Edim in this case. But in a normal case, you would require a Kiyum Ashtar. Right, so now the Gemara says, question of whether you have Tashma here or not. And the question as to whether you have the gears of Tashma or not is whether this is just an independent question of Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan, or is this continuing the questioning between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish about what the Raya, or the meaning of the word Raya, is. In our Mishnah, is Raya Be'idim or Raya Piyum Ashtar? Shall Rabbi Shimon Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan? Because now Rabbi Shimon Lakish challenges Rabbi Yochanan. Zo Sheshnuya B'Mishnat Bar Kapara. This is what was written in the Mishnah Bar Kapara. Harai Shayahu Chosadeh, he was eating in a field, Uba B'Cheskat Sheishalo, and we believe that it's his field he's been eating there. V'kara Alav Echad Arar. An individual comes along and casts aspersions on his ownership. Lomar Shalehi, it was my property. V'otzize Et Ono Lomar Shemechartali Oshenatatali B'Matana. And then the individual's in the property, whips out the contract, and says, you sold it to me, you gifted it to me. Now, imamar, so if the individual says, Eini makir b'shtar zeh me'olam, the individual is casting aspersions on it, says, I never saw such a star in my life, it's a false star, it's a forgery. In that case, itzkayim ha'shtar b'chotamav. You need to validate the star, the signatories of the star will come and validate the star. So if the person who's casting aspersions on his ownership says the star is not a valid star, then you have to go get the star validated. Once you validate the star, the case is over. Imamar, if the individual is casting aspersions here says, Shtar pasimhu ze, o shtar amana, shemacharti lecha velo natata li damim. It's either was a shtar pasim or a shtar amana. A shtar pasim, according to the way the Rashbam reads it over here, is a case where he's mifayesim. He appeases him to write him a shtar to say that he owns the property. He wants to look richer than he is. He wants to have evidence of assets that are not really his. He wants to do that because he's marrying off his daughter and he wants to look like he's a person of means. He's going to borrow money and he wants the creditors to feel secure with lending him money. So he gets his buddy to write him a shtar that says that the property is his. So of course, it's not a real shtar because he only wrote it in order to have him fluff his feathers and say that he owned more property. You're not supposed to write a shtar. You shouldn't write such a shtar. Nobody should sign on such a shtar. But the guy claims that, yes, the shtar is a shtar that was written, but it was written in this following manner, as a shtar pasim. Or a shtar amana. It's a case where the individual, for instance, said, I'm going to sell you the property, and I'm waiting for you to pay the cash. He writes up the shtar, and he hands it to him, and he says, listen, I trust you to pay me the money. I'm going to give you the shtar, even though you have yet to pay the money. Then all of a sudden, he never pays him the money. Now they're in court, and the guy is saying, yes, you have a shtar to evidence the fact that you bought it, but you never paid me the money, so it's an invalid shtar. So the individual admits that this is a shtar, but in admitting it's a shtar, he says it is invalid. It's either a shtar pasim or shtar mana, which are invalid shtarot, and the sale wasn't the real sale over here. Im yesh edim halech achar edim. If there are witnesses there, then follow the witnesses, whatever they tell us. Bimav aleich achar ashtar. If not, you go after the shtar. There's no pesha also peshitir. The point is that what he is saying here is that you do not require a validation of the shtar. In a situation where he denies the shtar completely, then we require a validation of the shtar. In a case where the individual admits to the fact that he wrote the shtar, but then he, in the same breath, tries to invalidate it, you don't have a right to invalidate the shtar after you've validated it. If you admit the shtar is written, we have a shtar with signatories to it, they won't sign on a shtar if it's invalid. That means that we're going to believe that this shtar is a valid shtar. Now you want to cast aspersions on that by saying it's a shtar pasim shtar mana? You do not have such a right. Who is the author of this position? Who is the author that says that a shtar where the parties admit to writing it, but then invalidate it, that does not need another validation? It's good enough as it is. Let's say, Lema Rabbi Meiri. That would mean that it is like Rabbi Meir, Damer, Modeh B'Shtar Shekatavo, Ein Tzarich L'Kaimo, V'lo Rabbonan. So Reish Lakish says, that breita that's brought by Bar Kapara must be like the position of Rabbi Meir and not like the Chachamim. And according to the Ramban, Reish Lakish's question derives from the conclusion that we're going to get to in this Gemara, that the positions of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are flipped. And Rabbi Yochanan believes that the machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir is with regards to whether by a shtar you have to be Mekayim the shtar. So then, what Reish Lakish suggests to Rabbi Yochanan is that this position of Bar Kapara is only according to Rabbi Meir. Because we had the machlokim before between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir as to whether when an individual admits to writing the shtar, do you still need to validate the shtar or do you not need to validate the shtar? Over here, where the conclusion is that when he says it was a shtar pasim or shtar amana, that we say that if you have edim, let them come and testify. If you don't have edim, the shtar will govern. That shows you that you do not need any more kiyuma shtar, except for the admission of the individual that he wrote the shtar. Even though he claimed it was a shtar pasim or shtar mana, nevertheless, his admission to writing the shtar validates the shtar. You need nothing more, which is Rabbi Meir's position that we saw before. So that's what Reish Lakish says to Rabbi Yochanan. In this case, I would suggest that Bar Kapara's position or Bar Kapara's breita is according to the position of Rabbi Meir. Because that's the position we've seen for Rabbi Meir. We have an admission by one of the parties that they wrote the shtar, they don't have a right to invalidate it afterwards. And that's what we have here. He's saying that he wrote the shtar, but it's a shtar pasim. He wrote the shtar, but it's a shtar amana. So he's trying to cast aspersions on the shtar, even though he admits to writing the shtar. Who's the one who says that the shtar governs in that case, and you don't need additional validation? That's Rabbi Meir, and that's the psak we're seeing over here. In a case where he denies the validity of the shtar completely, there we need evidence of the shtar being valid. But in a case where he admits to the shtar being written, he just says it was an improper shtar, over there we say, if they're edim, let the edim testify. If not, the shtar will govern. So what you see from there is you don't need any additional validation above and beyond the statement that this individual wrote the shtar or agreed that he wrote the shtar, even though he cast suspicion on it afterwards. Rabbi Yochanan says back to Reish Lakish, that's not the case. I believe that not only does Rabbi Meir believe this, but even the Chachamim believe that if you have an admission by the obligated party or the gifter that the shtar is a valid shtar, that's enough to validate the shtar. You need no other evidence to that fact. And therefore, those individuals can't cast aspersions on the shtar, even according to the Chachamim. Bob Mifleg Plege, what are you talking about? We saw that Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim argue about this point. Titania, we had a breita. Ein ne'emanim leposlo divrei Rabbi Meir. Where the edim came along and said, we did sign in the shtar, but we were invalid edim. Rabbi Meir says they're not believed. Chachamim amrim ne'emanim, and the Chachamim say they are believed. So you see from the Chachamim's position that when people come along and admit to signing on a shtar, writing a shtar, you still need additional validation above and beyond that. And when they say we were invalid edim, they ruin the shtar. Says Amalei, I edim alima umare shtara iu kol kamine. Just because edim have the ability to invalidate a shtar doesn't mean that the individual has a right to invalidate the shtar. Dealing with two different issues over here. The edim, who are central to the validity of the shtar, if they come along and admit that they signed the shtar but they were invalid edim, they are casting aspersions on the essence of the shtar itself. They're saying that the shtar was never a valid shtar because we were not valid edim. Over there, edim have a right to invalidate the shtar in that manner. Over here, we're talking about an individual. An individual who said, I wrote the shtar, but it was a false shtar. I wrote the shtar, but it was a forgery. An individual doesn't have a right to do that. The shtar standalone has validity. You have a shtar with a dim sign on it. We would not have thought otherwise. And now that you admit you wrote the shtar, that only brings us more evidence to believe what's written in the shtar and to ignore what you're saying, that the shtar was a false shtar. So Rabbi Yochanan differentiates along the tzrichuta that we saw in the previous amud. The Gemara brought the tzrichuta that the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir argue both in the case where it's the individual, as well as in the case where it's the edim. Rabbi Yochanan comes along and says, that's not true. The Chachamim argue on Rabbi Meir when we're speaking about edim. But when it comes to the individual, they will agree that that individual's aspersions are not strong enough to undermine the shtar if he admits to writing the shtar. Amar leiv, alo mishmech amru. Don't we have in your name, we've heard quoted in your name, Yafeh aru b'nei mishpacha. that the family, in the case of Bnei Brak, were right in their questioning of the sale. And if that's true, that means that you believe that the shtar needs additional validation. Over there, the Bnei Mishpacha agreed to the fact that the shtar was written by this individual. They just say he was a katan at the time. If you say that a shtar that you have admission of being written is enough to validate it, then why are the Bnei Mishpacha correct over there? They admit the shtar was written. That should give the advantage to the Lekuchot, and the burden of proof should be on the Mishpacha. The fact that you back the position of the Mishpacha and say that they are correct in their claim shows that you believe that the shtar is not valid. Says, no, that was said over by my Talmud, Rabbi Lazar. I never said such a thing in my lifetime. So now what's interesting about this is that other places in Shas, the Gemara tells over that Rabbi Yochanan got very upset because he heard that Rabbi Lazar was giving shir, saying over Torah, and he was not giving attribution to Rabbi Yochanan and saying, I heard this from Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan got upset that Rabbi Lazar is not quoting him, both because of the fact that it was his Torah, but more importantly, the Gemara tells us in other places that Siftei Tzadikim Tovavot Bekever, that their lips quiver in the Kever when Torah is being said over in their name. So it's important to say over the Torah in their name because that keeps them alive even after they pass away. So Rabbi Yochanan was upset with Lazar. One of the Amoraim comes in and placates Rabbi Yochanan with the following mashal and says, Yoshua bin Nun, when he taught Torah, he didn't say every time he taught Torah. That's what I learned from Moshe. This is what Moshe taught me. Moshe says, because everybody knew that everything that Yeshua had, all the Torah of Yeshua, came from Moshe Rabbeinu. So it was understood or implicit in every statement that he made that it must have come from his Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu. And so people just assume that the default is, if he's saying Torah, it's Torah that came from his Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu. Similarly, Rabbi Lazar, who's a Talmud Muvak of yours, he doesn't have to say over the Torah in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, because everybody knows that whatever Rabbi Lazar is saying definitely came from Rabbi Yochanan, unless he states otherwise. So that's the default state, is that he's quoting the name of Rabbi Yochanan. What you see from this is that attribution of Rabbi Lazar's statements to Rabbi Yochanan was automatic. And maybe over here the same thing. Rabbi Lazar said this, but then it was automatically attributed to Rabbi Yochanan, even though it didn't come from Rabbi Yochanan, because that was the assumption in any statement from Rabbi Lazar. Over here, Rabbi Yochanan denies it and says it's only the statement of Rabbi Lazar. So I'm a Rabbi Zeira. Im yichbor Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Lazar tamido, yichbor b'Rabbi Yanai Rabbo. Alright, if Rabbi Yochanan wants to deny the fact that he ever said this, and say that his Talmud, Rabbi Elazar, said it of his own volition, but Rabbi Yochanan himself never said it, or in essence saying that it's not from me, then is Rabbi Yochanan going to say the same thing about his Rebbe, Rabbi Yanai? Dama Rabbi Yanai, I'm a Rabbi. What's he going to do now? His Rebbe explicitly makes a statement that a shtar that is admitted to being written still requires additional validation afterwards. That's against Rabbi Yochanan's position. Rabbi Yanai over here, the Rebbe of Rabbi Yochanan, says exactly the same thing that Rabbi Elazar said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. So now if you have Rabbi Yochanan's Rebbe and Rabbi Yochanan's Talmud saying this, it's a little hard for Rabbi Yochanan to deny that he ever said such a thing, because it would make sense then that Rabbi Yochanan was of that position. Vamalei Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi lo mishnatenu hizo. Rabbi Yochanan said back to Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi lo mishnatenu hizo, isn't that our mishnah? V'chamim omrim, amutzi mechabaro alav haraya. Ein raya ala b'kiyum shtar. That the raya here comes with the kiyum shtar. So he says, that would exactly be our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, the Chachamim, demand that you have a validation of the shtar. In our Mishnah, you have the gifter admitting that he wrote the shtar, but he said he was a Shchemera. So he admits to writing the shtar, yet we still require additional validation, which is a Motzi Mechamero, Alav Araya. And so he says to his Rebbe, Rabbi Yanai, you're saying this over, isn't that found in the Mishnah over here? So again, you have corroboration in the fact that Rabbi Yochanan believes that the Chachamim's position is a shtar that is admitted to being valid still requires additional validation above that by the edim that signed on it or other edim that testified to the signatories of the shtar. Biram, Miriam Divrei Rabbeinu Yosef. Despite the fact that our Mishnah says that, we still would more likely subscribe to the way that Rabbi Yosef has it. To Amar Rabbeinu Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Zo Divrei Chachamim. That's the position of the Chachamim. Alvar Rabbi Meir Omer, Modeh B'Shtar Shekatavo, Tzarich Mekayim Mo. That if you admit to a shtar, you need to be Mekayim it. What the Rabbeinu Yosef says is that the Mishnah, or the positions of our Mishnah, are backwards. that in our Mishnah where it says Divrei Rabbi Meir, and then Chachamim Arim Mutzim Mechaveru Lavaraya, their positions are actually flipped in our Mishnah, and the real way to read it is that the position in the beginning is the Chachamim, and the position at the end, Mutzim Mechaveru Lavaraya, is Rabbi Meir. And that means that the Chachamim believe that a shtar that has an admission associated with it, Ein Tzarich Lekaimo. And that would support what Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here. So my Divrei HaKol, but didn't Rabbi Yochanan just say everybody agrees to that? So no matter whether you have the position being Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, or the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, whichever way you would read the Mishnah, one of the two parties argues over there. One says that the shtar needs validation, and one says it doesn't need validation. Okay, now you flipped it to the Chachamim on the side of Rabbi Yochanan. So that makes it easier for Rabbi Yochanan to say that. But nevertheless, Rabbi Meir still argues on it. How can you say that's a Divrei HaKol? So my Divrei HaKol, Dirabbanan legabei Rabbi Meir, Divrei HaKol hi. When you look at the Rabbanan, the majority position versus Rabbi Meir, it's as if everybody says it. He's dismissing Rabbi Meir's opinion as a dat yachid. It's questionable as to whether this girsa is found in the Gemara. The Rashbam says that this is found in the Gemara, and he interprets it. He explains it in this manner. But then if you look in the Balei Tosafot, the Balei Tosafot quote this reasoning as a way to answer the problem. They say, oh, what about the fact that Rabbi Yochanan said Divrei HaKol? And then they give this answer, which implies that they did not have that in the Gemara. If they had it in the Gemara, they wouldn't need to tell us that. So it implies that they didn't have that language, and that's the answer of the Balei Tosafot. Had to explain Rabbi Yochanan's statement of Divrei HaKol, and then got later added into the Gemara as a part and parcel of the Gemara. So that would be what's implicit out of the position of the Balei Tosafot. It's the Rishonim answering on behalf of Rabbi Yochanan trying to explain why it is, but not that the Gemara had this line in it, because you're right, it's not something that we normally find in the Gemara, a language that we normally find in the Gemara. According to the Rashbam, this Shita of the Rabbeinu Yosef that brings the Girsa in the following manner is coming to explain the statement of Rabbi Yochanan before, who said that Modeh Bishtar Shekatavo Ein Tzarich Lekaimo. That was Divrei HaKol. That is explained by flipping the positions in our Mishnah. That's how the Rashbam reads it. And he continues to read through the Gemara in that following manner. That positions in the Mishnah are actually flipped. And therefore, we're going to have to flip everything else in the whole sugya now to match up with the flipping of our Mishnah according to Rabbeinu Yosef. And therefore, Yochanan's statement was following the position of the Chachamim rather than the position of Rabbi Meir. And then the question that Rabbi Yochanan had of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yanai, was premised on the original version of the Mishnah before he knew about the flipping of the Mishnah. And the same thing about his statement of Yafet Iriru B'nei HaMishpacha was premised also on this idea that the Mishnah was the other way around. But now that we know that the Mishnah's flipped, Rabbi Yochanan's position also changed when he knew that the position was flipped. But those were all premised on the original version of the Mishnah. Once he got to the conclusive version of the Mishnah through Rabbeinu Yosef, then he comes to the position that Modeh B'Shtar Shekatavo Ein Tzarich Lekaimo, like the position of the Chachamim in our Mishnah now. Others suggest that Rabbi Zeira's answer over here, of the Amar Rabbeinu Yosef, is not coming to resolve the Stira in Rabbi Yochanan, but rather to explain what Bar Kapara was said. And conclude that Bar Kapara's position says, Zo Divrei Chachamim, Aval Rabbi Meir Omer, Modeh B'Shtar Shekatavo, Tzarich Lekaimo. And saying that it is not Divrei HaKol, but rather that the Mishnah Bar Kapara is only the position of the Chachamim and not Rabbi Meir. Once you do that, you're going to run into problems similar to what we're going to see according to the Rashbam, while still others suggest that the statement here is an answer or referencing to why Rabbi Yanai made that statement. Rabbi Yochanan's question to Rabbi Yanai is invalidated by saying that Rabbi Yanai's position is premised on the following. Now, wait a minute. Even if you say that Rabbeinu Yosef is quoting the Chachamim's position that way, our Mishnah, you go look at our Mishnah, it says just the opposite. Chachamim omrim umetzim chavero lavaraya. It says, Epoch, flip the Mishnah. Rabbeinu Yosef has the right version of the Machlok between the Rameir and the Chachamim, and therefore in our Mishnah you would flip the Girsa in our Mishnah. Vatanya, what about the Braita from Tubot? Ein ne'manim leposlo divrei Rabbi Meir, Chachamim omrim ne'manim. What about the fact that the Braita over there has their positions the opposite of what you're trying to explain now? That the Chachamim believe that you need to validate it, and Rabbi Meir says you don't need to validate it when the Edim admit to signing on it, but then try to cast aspersion on their signatures. Again, Epoch, flip it around, flip their positions in that Braita. Rabbi Yochanan, Raya Beidim Kamar. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan say that the Raya in the Mishnah is Raya Be'edim, which would seem to indicate that they're not arguing about this issue of Shtar, but rather about the issue of whether you need to bring Edim as evidence? Epoch, again, flip his position with Reish Lakish, and then Reish Lakish will be the one who's saying Edim, and Rabbi Yochanan will be the one who's saying that they're arguing about Shtar, as to whether you need to validate a Shtar when the party admits to writing the Shtar. So according to the Rashbam, who is working under the premise that they flip the positions in the Mishnah, then the Gemara continues along that thinking, and now has to deal with the fact that Rabbi Yochanan said that the Mishnah is speaking about Edim, whereas it seems that the Rabbi Yochanan in the explanations where we're reconciling with Rabbi Zeira, Rabbi Yanai, and so on and so forth, all believe that Rabbi Yochanan believes the Mishnah was speaking about Moda Bishtar and Tzarich L'Kaimo or not. How do we reconcile that? We flip the position of Rabbi Yochanan with that of Reish Lakish. So the Rashbam continues along that line of thinking. On the other hand, the Rishonim will believe that the statement of Rabbeinu Yosef here is qualifying Bar Kapara's statement against Rabbi Yochanan's explanation over there, not flipping our Mishnah. Then the whole diyun until now was trying to deal with, once you've said that, how do you deal with these other pieces of evidence that seem to indicate otherwise? And we said Epoch. Now the Gemara leaves that alone and goes back and says, okay, that might be Rabbi Zeira's opinion. Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is that that statement is Divrei HaKol. And then he asks from our Mishnah on his Rebbe, Rabbi Yanai, and says that our Mishnah is talking about a case of Moda Bishtar in Tzarich L'Kaimo or not, because that's how he asked the question of Rabbi Yanai. Yet, we found, or we know, that Rabbi Yochanan says that the Raya in our Mishnah is Raya Be'edim. So how do we internally reconcile for Rabbi Yochanan over here, given that that's Rabbi Zeira's view about flipping everything around? But for Rabbi Yochanan, who doesn't have that view, how do we reconcile internally with Rabbi Yochanan's position? The answer to that is Epoch. Flip Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And then the Gemara goes on to ask, if you're going to flip their position, should you also flip the question? The Gemara says, Lema Lepoch Nami Tiyufta. If that's the case, then maybe you should also flip the question that was asked. We had over here, Eitvei Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan asked the question of Reish Lakish. Well, that's all premised on their opinions being the opposite. I mean, that's a premise on the opinion that Rabbi Yochanan says it's Edim, is the Machloket in the Mishnah, and Reish Lakish says that the Machloket in the Mishnah is about whether you have to be Mekayim the Shtar. And then Rabbi Yochanan poses his question. If you flip their positions now, Rabbi Yochanan is saying it's the Kiyum HaShtar, and Reish Lakish is saying that it is Edim, then maybe you have to flip the question as well. The Gemara says, no, you don't have to flip the question. The question can stay in place. This is what Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Bishlama, now according to me, the new Rabbi Yochanan who says that the machloket in the Mishnah is about whether you have to be mekayim the shtar or not. According to me, I mean a raya bikum shtarot, that the raya that the chachamim require, but now it's not the chachamim anymore, it's Rabbi Meir who requires the raya. That is a case of shtar. That's why the lekuchot were in possession of the nechasim. According to you, Damra, raya be'edim, that you say that the raya was with edim. How are the lekuchot ever in possession of the nechasim? Remember over there, the Reish Lakish responded to Rabbi Yochanan and said that you understood that case in Bnei Brak. The case in Bnei Brak is not where the Bnei Mishpachar are in possession of the property and the Kuchot are trying to take it away. It's a case where the Kuchot are in possession of the property and now the Bnei Mishpachar is trying to take it back. And I agree, Reish Lakish says that that's why you need Raya Be'edim over there, because the validation of the Shtar is not going to do you anything or any good. So now, the way that the Gemara rereads it is that that's exactly Rabbi Yochanan's question on Reish Lakish. It says, according to me, it makes sense that the lekuchot, that the buyers are in possession of the property. They're in possession of the property because the machloket here is about the shtar. We have a valid shtar over here. Since we have a valid shtar, the lekuchot took the property. Now the Bnei Mishpacha want to undermine that shtar. They have to bring evidence to undermine the shtar in order to change the status quo. But according to you, that the machloket is about Edim, then the position of the Chachamim over there, and Reish Lakish, according to the Rashbam, does not flip our Mishnah. The position of the Chachamim is a motzi mechavero alav haraya, that you have to bring evidence to take the property. The Kuchot can't be in possession of the property unless they bring evidence, unless they bring Edim to change the Chazokah, which is that it stays with the Bnei Mishpacha. So for you, he says, I don't understand why you think it's in the possession of the Lukuchot. For me, I can explain why it's in the possession of the Lukuchot. Why would you want to say it's in the possession of the Lukuchot? Because of the issue of Nivul, which is that we saw before that when Rabbi Akiva says that it's not right, it's not appropriate to be in the body, the parties back away. And in backing away, we show that that must mean that it's talking about the family. Only the family back away. The buyers would not back away in that case. And that would mean that the property is in the hand of the Lukuchot. The property is in the hand of the Lukuchot. The only reason it's in their hands is you believe that the shtar or the question of validation of the shtar was at hand. And so according to the Rashbam, where you flip the Mishnah, the position of the Chachamim is that you don't need a validation of a shtar, and that's why it's in the possession of the Lukuchot. According to the other Rishonim, who more narrowly explained what the Gemara before and said we don't flip the positions in our Mishnah, they will say that it's a case where there was a Kiyum HaShtar, that the Chachamim do require a Kiyum HaShtar, and that requirement was met over here, and you can see that in their Beinu Gershom, who says, Malukuchot kaimu shtaran v'nachtu b'nechzai, that they already were mekayim the shtar, and that's why they're in possession of them, and that's why the situation lies out that the Lukuchot are the ones in possession, and you're trying to get it back from the Lukuchot in that instance. But if you say that the question is Edim, then it would never be in the hands of the Lukuchot until they bring evidence to take it away from the Bnei Mishpacha. Amarle, modina lecha ba'arar, the Bnei Mishpacha, d'lav ararhu, my kamrei katanaya. Chazoka, in Edim chutmim ashtar, elim kein aseh gadol. He says, listen, I agree with you that the Bnei Mishpacha, or their claim over here, is not a valid claim. Because their claim is that the shtar was invalid because he was a katan. We have countervailing evidence over here that says that he really was a gadol at the time. We have signatories on such a shtar. They would only have signed the shtar if the individual transacting was a gadol. So now you're coming to cast aspersions on the contract and say that the chazaka should be that it's with the Bnei Mishpacha. And therefore now you're trying to move it from the Bnei Mishpacha to the Kuchot. They have to bring Edim to evidence that. That is because you assume the chazaka is that it belongs to the Bnei Mishpacha. Because they cast aspersions on the contract. He says their aspersions on the contract are questionable. Because their questioning of the contract is the fact that he was a katan at the time. But that means you're also trying to invalidate the Edim at the same time. Vedim signed on a shtar, that in all likelihood means that he was a gadol. And that means that the evidence or the chazaka is actually leaning in favor of the Lukuchot. You have a valid shtar here. You have a shtar that was signed by Edim, which would also indicate that the individual was a gadol at the time. The chazaka lies with the individuals who bought the property. The Bnei Mishpacha want to change that? They got to bring the proof. They got to bring the evidence. They got to bring the Edim to undermine that. If that's the case, then even Reish Lakish agrees that the property is with the Lukuchot now, and they're Bnei Mishpacha trying to extract it. And the Bnei Mishpacha said, let's do a Bdika. Rabbi Akiva says to them, that's Menavo the mate, and they walk away. Why do they walk away? Because they are Bnei Mishpacha. And so that way, both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish in this instance believe that the property is with the Lukuchot, and the Edim are trying to remove it and bring it back to the Bnei Mishpacha. And even though this would hold true for the case in Bnei Brak with Rabbi Akiva, it would not be true of our Mishnah, because in our Mishnah, the Safek of him being a Bari or a Shchimira has no influence or impact on the validity of the Shtar. The Shtar is a valid Shtar, whether it's a Shtar Bari or a Shtar Shchimira. And therefore, in the conclusion of our Mishnah, at least according to Reish Lakish, if you say it's being a Bnei Edim, Hamotzi Michaver Olav Araya, the Raya or the burden of proof will be on the recipient to bring Edim to take it away from the gifter, because we go Batar Chazaka, and the gifter is the one in possession of the property over here. Then the Rashbam over here brings, Umaskana Dishmaita, the conclusion of our sugi is, Modeh B'Shtar Shekatavo Ein Tzarech Lekaimo. That someone who admits that a shtar was written does not have to validate it. Kishtu Shmuel Uke the Rabbi Yochanan. Like Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, Loshna Echa De'iu Maralei L'Shtara. Doesn't matter if the aspersions on the shtar are cast by the individual himself who wrote the shtar. Doesn't matter if Edim are the ones that are coming to invalidate their signatures on the shtar. They do not have a right to invalidate the shtar. And if we have an admission from them that they were signatories to the shtar, or admissions that the individual himself wrote the shtar, that's enough for the shtar to be valid. And if they want to undermine it, they're going to have to be Edim to undermine it. Their statement in of itself cannot undermine it. And that is because we would pass in like Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan in these types of situations. Although if you look in the Balei Tosafot, They say that despite the fact that the Rashbam over here concludes that the halacha should be like Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel, nevertheless, they disagree. That we pass on like Rav Nachman, because in Ketubot, Rav Nachman's of the opinion, so the Pelietos would say, yes, from our sugya over here, it would sound like the halacha should be like Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel. But the other hand, if you look in the Gemara in Ketubot, Rav Nachman disagrees. And in general, when we have a position of Rav Nachman in Dinim, we follow that position of Rav Nachman because he was a Dayan, and he gets extra weight in Psak Halacha with regards to monetary issues and Dinim. And therefore, he says that the Rashbam's conclusion here is incorrect, and that we should pass them like Rav Nachman, not like Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel. And therefore, if you had a shtar that was admitted to, but invalidated by that admission, either because the Edim said we were under duress, or we were ktanim, or the individual who signed it said I was a shchemera, or some other information that makes it that it would be invalid, you would need to then bring in Edim to validate the shtar, because that does cast aspersions on the shtar. Of course, this is all midrabanan, because midoraita, a shtar is valid with its signatories, you don't need any validation, kiyum a shtar is all a din derabonon. And what the Gemara is discussing over here is that din derabonon. What happens in the case where the person admits to the shtar or the edim admit to the shtar? Do you still have to validate it or not? But the concept of validation of a shtar in and of itself is all edim derabonon. Okay, we're going to stop over here, 9 lines down in the middle of Kufnun Hey Amud Aleph.